Bonjour, Nani Merenakwe, Nadishnikas Makwoderem. My name is Dancing Star. I come from the Bear Clan. I'm a member of the Mi'kmaq First Nation, and the territory I come from is a little place called Batuntik, which is about 19 miles outside of Antigonish. I'm here today. I've been here at Prisoners Justice Days for about the last 20 years. I started working in 1980 in the prisons in Nova Scotia as the first woman Native liaison person, and learned about the atrocities that happened inside of the prisons. And I totally believe in there needs to be change. And a lot of my brothers and sisters that are not here to speak, I speak with them. I work at a Grand Valley prison for women. I do the spiritual work there. And I always ask them first before I say anything, because it's actually, we're here for them. We're here for the people who are inside to let them know that they're not alone, that they haven't been forgotten, that they may have put the walls up to keep them in, but they're also here to keep us out. So to let people know the truths and the realities of what happens inside of the prisons.
And can you give me an idea of what some of those truths and realities are? I mean, there are things that are portrayed in the media, in entertainment media, news media, but there's not much that really gets out from the inside. Especially with regards to, since this is Prisoners Justice Day, with regards to the treatment of the people that are inside. So can you go a little bit into what people face when they go inside?
It's horrible. The conditions are horrible. It's poor health care. I mean, you know, Workworth Institution has no doctor. You know, there are people in Workworth who have been waiting to go outside for testing around terminal illnesses that they haven't gotten because they're on detention orders and they're not allowed to leave the prison. I mean, I believe and I totally know for sure that the animals that are kept at the Humane Society are treated way better than the prisoners with inside of the prisons in this country. I mean, the visits, the family contact, the phone calls, I mean, it's all a cost to the family. And while the inmates, they work, they're forced to work, it's captured slave labor. And all of the work that's done within the prisons is done by the prisoners for about $1.50 a day. And so the highest pay grade is D. And Greg is a friend of mine I've just met, so he can help me with that. There are pay grades within inside of the prison. So you got the lowest grade, which is about $1 a day. It's gone down to zero a day.
Yeah, there's the lowest pay grade is nothing if you're not doing programs or schooling. And then you get 42, you get paid like every 2 weeks. It works out to be, I think, $4.25 a day is the lowest one. And then it's $4.80 a day or something like that. And then $5.30 a day, and then the next one's $6.90 a day, I think it's the highest one. But you don't go up to it right away. You have to be, you know, completed programs, a good work history, staying out of what they say is trouble and whatnot. They use it as incentive, I guess, in a positive and a negative way. The pay grade is comparable, you know, like, food isn't any cheaper in there, so really to maintain, there's no possible way to maintain a proper diet. That's in federal, provincial, won't even go there. You don't make any money. Your family, you know, family, friends have to help support you in there if you want anything extra. Like chocolate bar can be supplemented as a meal, basically. You know, the food can be horrendous. My name's Greg Simmons, and I'm the ex-prisoners rep for CTAC, the Canadian Treatment Action Council, deals with HIV, AIDS, and/or HCV, which is Hep C, and access to treatment issues. It's basically dealing with access to treatment issues. Like Wanda was saying, that, you know, doctors, I went to a working group with the Ministry of Community Safety and Correctional Services, and one of the head doctors from ministry told me that 8 out of 10 physicians that work in the institutions do not know about antiviral treatment for HIV or HCV. That's ridiculous. You know, the policies, you have wardens making healthcare policies that have no training in doctor as a doctor or medical services. Wanda was saying about no doctors, I think you're saying Workworth. Well, in provincial institutions, basically, if your doctor from out in community does not help you and follow you inside, you're in trouble. They'll cut off your antiviral treatments. You cannot start, if you're in need of treatment, you basically cannot start it because they do not have specialists within the institutions. In federal, it is better, but you still have a long wait time to go out and see specialists, and if the doctor does not say you need it, they can actually tell you that you have to pay for the transportation, and that's for paying the guards, paying for the gas, the van, and everything. That's ridiculous. You know, the World Health Organization says that prisoners have to have the same access as people out in society. Well, we do not get that. I can talk about harm reduction. Ask them, they don't know what harm reduction is within these walls, okay? They've had a three-prong attack to deal with addictions, mental health, and the recidivism rate. It obviously hasn't worked. They're talking about making mandatory sentences because that hasn't worked, where one of the big things that they haven't tried is harm reduction, a proper harm reduction strategy. And if you don't do that, how can you just jump from level 1 to level 5 without going to levels in between? They don't want to.
I'd like to ask both of you, given that eventually people inside these walls are legally, they're going to come out, mm-hmm. Why would they be treated in such a fashion as if they're never going to come out? By the administration, by the system? Why are they being treated as if they're going to die, effectively?
Well, in reality speaking, prisons have been made to lock people up that don't conform. And so if you don't fit into society's rules and you break a law, then you're considered to be less worth in society than the dogs we walk in parks. So it's all around what they call commissioners' directives, policies, and procedures. You know, and so it's money. Because once you become a prisoner, you're a ward of either the Ministry of Safety and Corrections or a ward of Correctional Services of Canada. So it's like a ward of a CAS, right. And so you're given an FPS number or an OMS number, because provincial is different than federal. And so you're no longer available. OHIP covers your health coverage in the province you live in. When you become a federal prisoner, Correctional Services of Canada pays for your health care. That includes your medication. You know, that includes all of the dentist work, anything that happens, all the tests that you have to go for is all paid by correction. It's not paid by OHIP. It's not paid by anybody. You are considered to be not in society anymore. I mean, for individuals who are what we call status Indians, who have a treaty right of free health care, or not free health care, it's health care that was provided for us as in trade of the land that most people are living on today, you lose those rights. And so it's about budget, it's about money, you know. And so working within, as you've mentioned, within those areas of AIDS and Hep C, and I don't like to use the word AIDS, I just like to say HIV, because people are have such a bad misunderstanding about the fact that everybody who is HIV positive has AIDS, and that's not true. You know, it's absolutely not true. You know, and so then they think right away that they're gonna be dead in a week. You know, and it's not true. You know, we have people who've been alive for 20 years and they're going to live longer. You know, there are antiretrovirals. You know, like I work on the street in that field now. And so I work with people who are maybe, and it's very, very confidential, never mention any names, never do anything that would describe those people. But they may be on a really awesome retroviral treatment program. They may have a choice in life, which is what we call harm reduction, is they may choose to use substances to deaden the pain in their life, whatever the issues might be. And so that leads to maybe breaking the law, who knows, trespassing, whatever. And they get into the system, like Greg says, they get into the system. We got them on this great regime that's helping them to keep, stay alive. And when they get them to, we get them into the, well, they get into the prison, and they don't have the medications with them.
They're forced. They give them a forced drug holiday, basically.
Right. They get a forced drug holiday, which means they come off of their drugs if they don't know what drugs they're on. So we try very hardly to keep our people. We go by numbers, but we accept collect calls as Pizan,
yep.
So that we have a list of what medications they are on. So, you know, they don't know what, like who knows? I'm on medication. I mean, who knows what? Well, I don't know half of it. I just know it's in a box. A guy from the drugstore gives it to me. But if I was to go to prison and they'd say, well, you're on any medication? I go, yeah, it's for high blood pressure, this and that. What's the name of it? I don't know. They would, and if the doctor felt that I didn't need high blood pressure medication, he wouldn't give it to me. So the new doctor that now just met me in prison for a day, and he may be thinking differently than the physician on the street. So he decides that, okay, you're on these medications, but he thinks these medications are better. He'll switch you.
Even though he's not an infectious disease specialist.
And then what happens, and what's really scary for us, and what's really scary for people, is that the virus can become drug resistant. And a drug resistance means that there are no drugs that are going to help you. And so if you continue to switch your medications really quickly or go off them for a while and then go back on them, the strain will come drug resistance, which means that the drugs aren't going to help you. And so by going, what we call the individuals, you know, are live on the street, who are homeless because they can't afford homes, not because it's their choice. They have no place to live in Toronto. And they come to prison, they can become drug, just like TB, the drug-resistant TB is exactly the same thing, you know, and so they get, it's so unfair. I mean, that's one issue. The harm reduction is the other issue.
But yeah, how can you even, I'm going to answer your question, I just want to finish off what I'm saying. How can you hire doctors that are not in tune with what people, the prisoners, what affects the prisoners, you know, like what I was saying, HIV and HCV treatments. If you don't, you can't switch medications if you're not up to date on antivirals and whatnot. But, you know, when it was mentioned, the commissioner's directives and all that, see, they've set up a system, basically, of employment. And it really is that simple. They want a failed recidivism rate. They want a high recidivism rate because it keeps people employed. And the more people that are in within these walls, then the more guards they'll hire. It's unfortunate, you know. Like, I'm not saying that people don't deserve to be in there. I deserved, when I was inside prison, I deserved to be there. I knew I was breaking the law. That was my choice. Okay, but it doesn't mean you treat me like an animal once I'm inside of there. Okay, now with the do with harm reduction, why would you see what people forget is like. That we get out, we have a release date. It's not the only life sentence is basically is for murder, and they have a release date too. Okay, life 25 is the maximum, and you also have the dangerous offender and dangerous sex offender sentence, but they still go up for hearings, right? So people forget that we get out, and if you keep us the way we are when we walked in those doors, what are we going to come out? We've had time within there to think to get worse. Why not help us to get better? It's just even to do with HIV and people, because HCV has 20 numbers 20 to 1. Okay? If you're not going to help us and keep us healthy with inside, it's going to cost you more money when I'm released because the food's horrible. You know, they see what stress does out here in society. Well, if you think stress is out here is bad, inside those walls. Try it in there. You walk in there and you can actually feel the stress. It's like you're hitting a wall. Okay, walk into Millhaven when people aren't getting their drugs or, you know, or there's a hate or there's racial tension or whatever. You know, and see, the problem is that, I hate to say it, but they create they've created the structure of the way prisons are run, okay? You know, they started up back in the 80s, protective custody. the reason why they started protective custody is basically because they're getting incentives for people to go down to lower security to rat on other people. Okay? So they created that. So then they created even more animosity in there. And then there's other things that they've created. Okay? And now when you're treated like an animal and you're almost forced to live like an animal, most times you're gonna act like an animal. You know? Why do they not have more people like me, Wanda, or other people that have been successful out here allowed to go back in there and show that there's a better way? Why do they make it so hard? Why do they make it so hard for prisoner rights groups or, you know, groups that organizations that help prisoners stay out to do good inside there? Why aren't they asking these organizations to run programs or start up programs? You know, like I remember sitting in Millhaven and they had this lady, God bless her, this great little old lady come in there and do anger management and said, now I can understand when somebody borrows your pen and doesn't give it back to you. Lady, when somebody bumps into me and wants, and I, you know, we got shanks coming out, that's anger. A pen's nothing. You know, they have people doing the programs within there, just like doctors, doing healthcare, that don't know nothing about what really is going on with us. And it has to stop. They have to start dealing with reality and start looking at making us healthy and whole, mentally, physically, and spiritually. You know, in the last 20 years, you know, they're starting to do better with the Aboriginal. The Aboriginals that are in there, they still have a long way to go. Why is it that the Aboriginals and the African Canadians are the most populated prisoners inside the walls? You know, and so that's why I say they have to work with organizations outside, because it doesn't start in prison, it does start out before that, but we're talking about prison today. Okay, and CSC and the ministries of correctional service for each province has to wake up, all right, and realize that they have to change the policies that they have, okay, and change the way their prisons are run, the way they're structured the prisons, if society, the community is going to be safe, okay, or if we're going to even be safe. You know, like, because they made my life dangerous by not giving me my proper medication. Why is it when I asked for a blood test in there, they kept shipping me after my blood test? Well, what's that about? You know, like, you see, it's just little games that they play that they should not have that power. And there's too much power structured out within these walls, okay? Now, I'm not putting all the blame on the system, because like I said, I knew right from wrong. You know, I brought a lot of what happened to me onto me. But, you know, I always say, my favorite say is, it takes two to tango, okay? And they have to change their way of looking at it, just like I had to change my way of looking at life.
And so that exactly what he says, you know, that's what harm reduction is. I mean, we have harm reduction in society. What have they done? Harm reduction in society. We can't smoke anywhere inside anymore. Have to be over 19 years old to drink. You know, so they put harm reduction in play in society on the streets, so that because people don't want secondhand smoke. You know, so why can't they take that same philosophy in society and place it with inside of the prisons? And understanding that, okay, what they did is you're not allowed to smoke in jail anymore, period. So they're not allowed to smoke where they live. You know, well, we're here today for one of the reasons. There are all the people who've died with inside of these walls. And in 1975, well, I guess it was 1974, and I can't remember the man's name, died of a heart attack because the alarm buttons were not working in the prisons, and there was an inquest. A year later, a man died for the exact same reason, because he had a heart attack and people couldn't get to him to save his life. Since that time, we can tell you how many, we can't even tell you how many, count the numbers of people who have died in prison. They've been sentenced to 3 years for a crime that they've committed, but they got death instead. And while I was at prison for women, I went through 6 suicides in 2 years, and I sent those women's home to their families in body bags, and they were sentenced to less than 2 years. They hung themselves in prison. I mean, so we're here because people die. People are not getting good health care. We want people to understand that. You know, and to forget, so the prisoners started this. They sat down in prison and refused to go to work and refused to go to eat on August the 10th so that no one else would die, so that people would understand. So inside today, the men and women did not eat. They did not go to work. They did not go to recreation. And those who practice prisoners' justice day did not make any phone calls home today. They did not do anything. And that was because they want people to remember that people die in prison. And they shouldn't be dying in prison. That should not be dying in prison.
Too many people have died.
Too many have died. And I can tell you, I have a brother in one of the prisons in the system right now. And I got back from Mexico and I told him not to call me today because it was the 10th. But when I was the last, before I left for Mexico for the HIV AIDS World AIDS Conference, I spoke with him. A man died of a heart attack in Work Worth Institution because they didn't get to him soon enough. There is no health care. They're dying. And myself, I worry about my brother because he has pulmonary disease. It has to do with his lungs. He was diagnosed 6 months ago. He's supposed to go out to get a pulmonary test and still has not been sent out. So we don't know how his disease had progressed. If they get it early enough, then he will live longer. If they don't, he will be dead in 3 years.
This is the last thing before I leave, I'm going to say. They don't need to try to break us for us to get better. They have to change that mentality. And you see, the people that have unfortunately committed suicide in there, they didn't need to do that. You know, and why is the system there that makes them feel that desperate? It has to stop. Thank you.
Yeah. And so you have to understand that they live with that. That the person in the next cell hears that person die. Hears them stop breathing and are yelling for the guards to come and they don't respond. And you have to live with that for the rest of your life in your heart. And you want them to, you want to understand why they're angry. Or why they're hurting. Can you imagine people on the street who have watched somebody die? They get all kinds of help. They get grief counseling. They get help from psychiatrists, psychologists, grief. They don't get any of that. Nothing. Deal with it. That could be their best friend, and what they have to do is walk away. So the people who work in prison, they don't understand. And those of us who work in there and understand, they don't want us in there because we do understand. And when they get outside, there are very few people who understand how to help the people because they don't know how they lived inside. So I always tell people, go in your bathroom, lock yourself in for 24 hours, put a piece of plywood over the tub, and have someone deliver your meals to you. You have a bathroom that's about 6 foot by 8, and I'm not caught in a jacuzzi tub either. And that's what those inmates live in, for 24 hours a day. Don't leave your 800 square foot apartment for 3 months. Don't leave it, have everything delivered. I'll tell you what you're gonna wear that day. I'm gonna tell you when to go to bed. I'm gonna tell you what time you go to bed, what time you're gonna get up. I'm gonna tell you what you're gonna eat. I'm gonna tell you what you're supposed to do. I'm gonna tell you where you work. And if you don't listen to me, then I'm gonna place you in a 6 foot by 8 foot cell called segregation.